Chapter 11. No Torture. As soon as we got there, I saw I had been right when I told Russ they were easier on women. I had been expecting a big gray building, but it wasn't like that at all. There was a wire fence, maybe 10 feet high, with barbed wire on top. Inside it were regular streets and buildings. Some were apartment buildings like the one Naala lived in. Some had been stores once, and some had been houses. There were trees and grass around each building, just like always, and you could see the women in there were proud of them and were taking care of them as good as they could. It looked to me like the trees were all fruit trees. Here, I've gotten ahead of myself again. I ought to have said first that the guards who let us in were women. They looked tough, and they had uniforms and guns, but they were women. When they saw Naala's badge, they got very polite, and one of them walked us inside, and pretty close to the middle of the compound, where the warden's office was. It had been an office supply store before, Naala said. We went in there, and a woman with no gun showed us into the warden's office. She was probably 55 or 60, a big, raw-boned woman with gray hair. Seeing her, I figured she had most likely been around while the communists still had power, and I wondered what she had been doing back then. People here don't shake hands much, but she stood up and shook Naala's, and mine too.
"Welcome," she motioned toward a couple of swivel chairs. "You will get whatever it is you ask if it is possible. We at the People's Detention for Women are always glad to cooperate."
Naala thanked her, and she clapped her hands and told the woman who had showed us in to bring tea. Naala said,
18 months ago, two American spies, husband and wife, were arrested at the border. The husband was taken to the rural re-education center. The wife was taken here."
"I see. He has been released?"
Naala shook her head.
"He has escaped. That he will try to communicate with her, we think certain. He may try to free her as well."
I said, "She could have been released."
"So you think it would be a major error?"
The warden asked the wife's name. Naala gave it, and the warden turned to her computer.
"She sleeps in building 124.
She is outside it now, perhaps at work?"
"She should be, yes. Now it is the work time. She will be..."
More typing and tapping the screen.
"Sewing, building 17, we make uniforms for the army."
Naala spoke to me.
"We can have her brought to us, or we can go to her. You think which?"
"Go to her," I said.
"Why is this?"
"If we go to her, we can see what she's doing, what her surroundings are like, who she's working with, and so on. We can bring her here later, if we want to, or take her someplace else." The warden wanted to know if I was Russian, and Naala shook her head.
"You need not take us to the place where she works. I know you must be busy. Tell us where it is, and we will find it."
"I could never be so discourteous," the warden said. "I will assign a guide."
"This will not be necessary. Where is it? We must go."
Stuff like this went on for a while, and I wouldn't give it all here if I could. Pretty soon I could see that Naala wanted us to be free to snoop around, and the warden wanted to keep us from doing it. Finally, we got the guide, a short, fat woman with a whistle around her neck. She lectured us about the prison the whole way. Most of the women were in for shoplifting, and they got re-education to teach them that stealing from stores was wrong. I could tell it was strictly the company line and didn't pay a lot of attention to it. The factory had been a barn at one time, and not a very nice barn either, a long, low, whitewashed building that could have used a lot more windows. The floor was dirty and splintery, but the walls were covered with pictures, some torn out of newspapers and magazines, some photos, stuck up there with pins. Right then is when I got a surprise. All the women prisoners had big numbers, just like the ones we had worn in prison, sewn on their uniforms, and I could see our guide was looking at those. She didn't know what Rosalie Rathaus looked like. We passed on a bunch of women who were working at sewing machines and making quite a racket, and finally our guide asked one of the guards, women with uniforms but no guns, who were lounging around here and there. The guard just pointed. She was blonde, pretty thin, and not much older than I was.
Of course, she had no makeup, and she looked tired, but right off I noticed the bones in her face and her blue eyes. Fix her hair and give her a good night's sleep, and she'd be a whole lot better than decent. Give her the right makeup, too, and the right clothes, and she might knock your eyes out. She was working a machine I had never seen before. You stacked cloth on it, then laid a pattern on top of the cloth, and cut around it. It was sort of like a bandsaw, but not exactly. Nala said something to our guide, and she went over and pulled Rosalie away from her machine. After that, we marched her outside, where we could hear ourselves talk.
You are American? Nala asked. The wife of Russell Rathaus?
The blonde nodded. She looked a little angry and a little dazed, like she had just been smacked hard.
Where is he?
The blonde shrugged.
He has communicated with you?
She didn't understand that, and you could see it. I said, maybe I'd better translate.
Nala turned to our guide. You, get out of here.
The guide objected.
You were to show us where this woman was. You have done so, now go.
The guide argued pretty loudly. Nala's voice dropped almost to a whisper.
Do you know who we are? We are the J-A-K-A, you fool. Go, or you will wish you had never seen me.
It's funny, but when somebody with a bad complexion goes pale, you don't notice it. What you notice is that all the zits and things seemed to have jumped out at you. I said, we ought to go where she lives. I had a couple of reasons for saying that, but the main one was I wanted to sit down.
Nala agreed, so I told Rosalie we wanted to see her cell block, or whatever it was they called them here.
It was the first time she had heard me speak English, and her eyes got big. While we were walking along, she told me it was called a group house. For three or four steps, she held my hand. The group house was pretty big, and there were beds everywhere. Real beds, and what were probably army cots, and others that were just places various women had rigged up to sleep on. All the beds were sort of straightened around, and all of them had quilts sewn together out of scraps of uniform cloth. Those were about the color of mustard. Rosalie showed us hers, meaning a pad of scrap cloth on the floor. There was a real bed not far from it. I sat down on that and said, "How much younger are you?"
"I'm 24, he's 63.
She had known what I meant right away. "Has he been in touch with you?" There was a little tiny pause before she shook her head.
"Can that woman understand what we're saying?"
I didn't think Na'ala really knew much English, but that didn't matter. I knew what I had to say to get Rosalie to talk.
"Hell no,"
I made it definite.
"Then listen, please. Please, please listen, because I mean every word. Get me out of here, and I'll do anything you want me to do. Everything. Just get me out. Can you get me back to America?"
I said, "Maybe. It won't be easy."
"Russ is rich, and there's a joint account. I'm not sure how much is in there, but at least 50,000. I'll give you the entire amount, every last dollar."
I nodded and turned to Na'ala, keeping my voice down and talking fast. I don't know how much she's going to understand, but she'll have picked up a lot while she was in here. She probably knows more than she's willing to let on. Na'ala nodded. I asked if Rathaus had been in touch. She said no, but she was lying. She wants out of here really bad. If we get her out, but show her we can pop her back in any time we're pissed off at her, we'll get her cooperation. Na'ala nodded again. Outside, we can beat her also. I didn't like that, but I think I covered it pretty good. I said, "Right, and if Rathaus finds out we've got her, he may want a bargain, or try to get her away from us." "Either is good. In the last, he will not succeed. Do you wish to take her now?" "This minute, no. But today?" I shrugged. "Probably yes, if we can do it." I turned back to Rosalie. "How close were you to Rathaus's business?"
"I was his secretary."
"I see." Of course, I was trying to figure out whether she had heard what I said to Nala and how much she had understood. "Up until you two were married?"
"And afterward, too. He didn't want me sitting at home twiddling my thumbs, and I didn't want him getting another secretary. Then they sold the business. He and Mr. Debussy did. That was when we came here."
Got it. Now listen up. I may be able to get you out, but I'm going to have some cooperation. Do you seriously want out, want it really bad, or are you just stringing me?
Oh, my God.
Rosalie looked like she was about to cry.
Please, please listen. I meant every word I said.
Okay. You've got an aunt who married some guy from this country.
Did Russ tell you that? Yes, I do.
Maybe he talked to your uncle about doing business over here?
They argued about it. Russ wanted to make the dolls in our factory, but Uncle Aeneas kept saying he could make them just as good and much cheaper here. I think Russ was thinking about setting up a little factory here, and that was why he agreed to come.
I thought he'd sold his company.
You didn't know him.
It took me a minute to digest that, because I had known Russ really well. Pretty soon I decided she was right. I said, he thought dolls might go over here? She nodded.
There were two or three places here that were buying them.
That was what I had been waiting to hear. You say you want out. This is your chance to prove it. I can get you out. And if you can name all three, I'll do it.
Oh, Lord.
Rosalie backed over to another bed and sat down.
I can't. I really can't. The company names were, you know, so ordinary. If I had a keyboard, maybe. Two were stores, and the other one was just a man's name, and it was terribly foreign. I remember that. Do you have to have this?
I shook my head. We have other ways of finding out. Only if you can tell us now, it'll impress my partner, and that'll be good for you. She tried, and tried hard. I could see that. But in the end, she came up empty. Na'ala said, ask where Rathaus is now. This she may know. So I did. She thought about that one, too.
Finally, she said, he's outdoors someplace. That's all I can tell you, not in a building.
That one threw me. I asked why she felt like that.
He was in prison, wasn't he? I think you said that.
I don't think I did. I just asked if he'd been in touch.
Oh. Well, they put me in prison, so I always thought they must have put Russ in prison somewhere, too. If he weren't in prison, he'd have been trying to get me out. That's what I thought.
I said, okay, let's say that he was in prison from the time you were arrested until last week. What then? Take it from there.
He'd want to get outdoors, that's all. He liked to get out. He hardly ever stayed in the office all day unless the weather was just awful. The weather's been nice lately.
You're holding something back, I told her. What is it?
She
started to cry, so I put my arms around her. I figured that if Na'ala and I were going to do good cop, bad cop, I was going to be the good cop, so there was no harm in trying to calm her down. Na'ala said, we will take her. Then you will have more time. That will help, I think. Take her now? Na'ala shook her head. No, we must speak with the Archbishop. We leave her here and come back when we are finished. You may tell her this. She will fear we do not come, and that will be good for her. So we gave Rosalie Na'ala's handkerchief, which was a good big one, and when she had stopped crying, I told her, I'm going to get you out. I promise, like we talked about, okay? She nodded. Only not right now. I can't. Soon. Are you going to cooperate when I do? She wasn't up to talking yet, but she nodded hard. That's good, because you're going to have to. If you don't, you'll go back here, or maybe to someplace worse. If you do, I may be able to get you back to America. She just stared. You could go back home. Are your folks still alive? That got another nod. You could see them. Home cooking and hugs from your mother, all that stuff. I want you to keep it in mind. We took her back to the sewing barn, checked in at the warden's office to tell her we were going, and left. I had an idea that the Archbishop's palace was going to be a long way from the women's prison. I was dead right about that, but it turned out to work in my favor. It was so far that we went to a police station instead and got a car. I was happy enough to, well, you know. It was a quiet ride. I knew it was too soon for me to start talking up Rosalie to Na'ala, but Na'ala didn't want to say much of anything that would be overheard by the cop driving. So we kept pretty quiet. I looked at the city mostly, trying to make mental notes about buildings that might make good landmarks.
One of those was the cathedral, which looked like it was about 500 years old and hadn't been kept up too well for the past couple of centuries. Another, not quite so good, was the bishop's palace, a big stone house that had been the work of at least three architects. I thought the Rococo part was definitely overdone, and I suspected that if the stones were to get sandblasted, it would be even worse. Nahala looked at her watch.
4:40 it is. That is perfect.
I got out, went around to the other side, and held the door for her. The cop gave a little snort at that, which was as close to talking as he ever came. A priest, young, thin, and hollow-chested, opened the door for us.
"We must see His Excellency at once," Nahala snapped. "Show us in."
"I'll have to speak to His Excellency."
The priest looked apologetic.
"We too," Nahala told him.
We were right at his heels, and when we got to what turned out to be the archbishop's study, we pushed past. He stood up, smiling, as if our busting in on him was just what he had been expecting, which it probably was.
"Welcome."
Old as he was, he still had one of those golden voices that are exactly right for public speaking.
"You will always be welcome here, my children."
"Thank you," Nahala said, and sat down. I took my cue from her and sat too.
"I trust you had a pleasant walk."
The archbishop sat quite a bit more slowly.
"We did not walk, a police car. We have been at the women's prison, you see. Even with the car, we are late, for which you must forgive us."
"As I do, and gladly."
His smile had not lost a single kilowatt. I decided it'd take a lot to ruffle him. Nahala turned to me.
"What is the name of the priest from Parustes?"
I told her Papa Zenon.
"He is here now in the capital, summoned by you?"
The archbishop nodded.
"An important matter, since he has a parish there he must neglect while he is here."
"His parish is in excellent condition," the archbishop murmured, "and he leaves three assistants. I feel sure it will survive without its shepherd for a few weeks."
"That long?"
"I hope not, but..."
His shoulders rose a quarter inch and subsided one at a time.
"The police there speak well of him."
"Well, well, well," I said to myself, "those phones on the light poles are pretty useful."
"I would expect them to."
The archbishop smiled again.
Nahala said, "May I ask why you have brought him here?"
"You may, of course. The question, I fear, is whether you will credit my answer. Papa Zenon is an experienced exorcist."
He cleared his throat.
"Every parish has an exorcist. I see you know it."
"I do," Nahala told him.
"Most never perform an exorcism. Those who do..."
The archbishop left it hanging. I decided I had been quiet long enough and asked, "Who's possessed?"
"You will not believe me, young man, when I say we do not know." "You do not, yet it is the truth."
Nahala leaned forward.
"That someone is, you know?"
"I do not know it. I feel it."
The archbishop picked up a pen from his desk, fiddled with it, and put it down again.
"I may be mistaken, but I do not believe I am."
"You have no evidence?"
"You wish me to take something from a drawer of my desk and show it to you?"
Nahala said, "Which you cannot do, I understand." "There are rumors. There are reports I have received from good, reliable priests. The tower of my cathedral is very tall."
Nahala waited, and so did I.
"You will not credit that a man of my age climbs every day to the top of that tower."
"It seems unlikely," she said. "Do you?"
"I have climbed it every day for the past 15 years, always early in the morning, often before sunrise in winter. There are 3 staircases. All are steep and all are high. I pray as I climb, a prayer for every step, and a longer prayer at the landings. At the top I stand among the bells and listen for the voice of God."
"What has he told you?"
"Many things, though he is often silent. When I can no longer climb to the top of my tower, I will retire. He has told me to do this, and I will not disobey."
"It may be that your successor will keep better to the point," Nahala said. We search for one Russell Rathouse, an escaped prisoner. Your exorcist has involved himself in our investigation. Why is this?
The Archbishop chuckled, which surprised the hell out of me.
We must find out. It may be that Papa Zenon would say you have involved yourselves in his. As I listen for the voice of God, I look out over this city. In the winter, the sky is dark, but there are many lights. It is summer, and we know God's own clear sunlight, but the city is wrapped in darkness. I sense it, and almost I see it.
There are always evil men, Nahala murmured. The Archbishop nodded.
Evil women, as well. As for the rest, our entire race is corrupted by original sin. This is something more. This is Satanism, the worship of evil. I have learned that these Satanists call themselves the Unholy Way.
When Nahala didn't speak, the Archbishop looked at me.
I once encountered an old woman who had been visited by an angel.
You will not believe it.
You're right, Your Excellency, I don't.
I never saw it, for it had gone by the time I met her. This was when I was a young priest, but she talked of it and named it and told me things it had told her that would unravel the tangles of certain theologians, if they could be persuaded to believe them.
The Archbishop opened a little box on his desk and took out a key. For a few seconds, he looked at it. He laid it down.
One thing she told me has remained with me to this day. She said that she was the only one who ever saw the angel. It was always in another room when visitors came. She would ask it where it had been, and it would explain it had been in the attic, or in the springhouse, or in the root cellar, or in the kitchen. Nevertheless, her visitors always commented favorably on her house. How bright and smiling all her rooms were, how clean everything was, how good the air smelled there.
It seemed like Nahala wasn't going to say anything then either. To fill in, I said, "Why are you telling us this?"
"It is not so for my city, for our city. There is a darkness now that the sun cannot drive out, and its air is close and fetid. It is possessed."
I nodded to show I understood.
I do not know how to exorcise a city. Neither does Papa Zenon. We must get closer. We must find the right room. Can you help us, young man?
I said, I will if I can.
I will not, Nahala told him. I will not because I do not believe you. We ask an explanation and you give us a boogie tale.
The Archbishop nodded as though he had expected it.
You want evidence, and I have no evidence. I have only this.
He picked up the key again and unlocked a drawer of his desk. For just a second, I thought the thing he took out might be a dead tarantula. When he laid it on his desk, I saw it was somebody's hand, dried and shriveled up. I heard Nahala's breath, a hiss like a snake's.
One of my priests brought this to me yesterday, the Archbishop explained. He told me the woman who had given it to him said she had found it. He did not say where. What do you think of it?
Nahala picked it up.
The purple color. Those are tattoos.
The Archbishop had taken a big magnifying glass from another drawer.
You will wish to read them, but you will find it difficult. They are old and the ink has blurred.
Some are blasphemous. I take it that will not trouble you.
Nahala shook her head. I was surprised that she had even heard him.
I asked, Did you say you just got this yesterday, Your Excellency?
He nodded. You seem to have gone over it pretty thoroughly.
He nodded again.
I did, this morning. It interests me, and I was looking at it when my secretary informed me that you would be here at 3. You have not looked at it.
Not very much, Your Excellency. I'll have a look when Nahala's through with it.
She glanced up.
Who told you about tattoos? That the ink blurs? No one.
The Archbishop smiled.
I happen to know something about them. The blurring takes place only very slowly, you understand. Years must pass, decades.
These are terribly dim.
Yes, they are. If you desire to read them, you will require my lens. Would you like it?
He held it up and passed it to Na'ala when she reached for it. I said, That's a woman's hand.
I agree, although we may both be wrong. There were traces of wax under the nails. Does that mean anything to you?
I shook my head. The nails were long, and some of them were broken or split.
Some superstitious people believe that the hand of a corpse can be made to reveal the location of a treasure. There is a ceremony, dark invocations, and so on. Those vary with the magician. The key points are that the hand is laid on its back and candles of corpse fat are placed on its fingers. 5 candles. They are lit with more ceremony, of course. After that, the hand is said to point to the treasure. It's nonsense, but the wax suggests that someone tried it.
It doesn't seem like corpse fat would make very good candles, I said.
I agree, young man.
The Archbishop was smiling a little.
What I found was wax, as I told you.
Na'ala laid the magnifying glass on his desk.
I must take this.
She seemed to hesitate.
I will require a bag for it, a bag or a box. Tell your secretary to bring me one.
There was a little bell on the desk. The Archbishop picked it up and rang it. It was just a little glass bell, but for some reason I didn't like the sound it made.
The hand will be returned to you when we are through with it, Na'ala told him. You are most gracious.
He looked quite happy.
A priest, you said. A priest gave it to you. You did not give us his name. It was Zenon.
The Archbishop stopped smiling.
No, it was not. I must have the name, and it must be the correct one. We will investigate this, I think. It is with this priest that we begin. Give me his name. I will, if you wish it. You would seem to think the hand involved with your search.
Na'ala shrugged.
The black magicians you fear freed Rathaus. This I think. Why should your priest be given such a thing? One of his parishioners brought it to him, I believe. May I ask why you believe the Satanists are involved in your case?
I said, I don't think they are. Na'ala does, probably because a big doll with a face like Russ Rathaus's was left in his bunk. The Archbishop's eyes went wide, and he leaned forward.
I guess you know about the dolls. Only I don't think Satanists made that one. Russ made dolls and sold them on the outside.
I see.
The Archbishop leaned back, smiling. I no longer wonder, madame, why the hand interests you. Or why the presence here of Papa Zenon does, for that matter. You wish the name of the priest who brought me the hand?
Na'ala nodded.
I do. The hand itself I also wish. You will have it. The priest is Papa Jason. His parish is St. Isidore's, near the canal. I trust that you will respect his person. He is a priest of God.
The secretary came in about then, and the Archbishop asked him to find a stout box large enough to hold the hand. You could tell he was curious, but didn't ask any questions. He just hurried away.
I have cooperated fully with you, the Archbishop told Na'ala. Will you concede that?
She nodded again, still looking at the hand.
That being the case, will you promise me that there will be no torture of Papa Jason?
I cannot bind my superiors, Na'ala told him.
I ask only that you bind yourself and this young man.
You have cooperated with me, Na'ala told him.
You say this, but I have no way of verifying it. You may be holding something back. I will now demonstrate my charity, which is very great. You have my word that if Papa Jason cooperates fully with me, I will not order him tortured. Papa Zenon is investigating for you, investigating the bad magic?
The Archbishop hesitated before he nodded.
I assumed, though you did not say it. My charity, the charity of the J.A.K.A., is such that I give you unasked the same guarantee concerning him. If he cooperates, I will not order him tortured, you may rejoice.
The secretary came back with a wooden box big enough to hold the hand. There were pictures on it, carved and painted, that looked pretty old.
As we left, I told Na'ala that Papa Zenon had been a good friend to me, and I hoped she would really take it easy on him. She laughed.
We of the JAKA do not torture, but it is useful for others to think we do. Your Papa Zenon is quite safe.
That's good, I said. Where are we going now to see this other priest?
Of course no. We go to fetch the woman from prison, the Rosalie.
That surprised me so much I didn't say anything more for a long time. But when we were back in the police car, and it was turning and turning through the crooked streets and scaring horses with its flashing light, Na'ala told me,
"We never torture.
Unless torture is absolutely necessary."